Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our Hideaway studio in East County. Happy Labor Day weekend, and thanks to all of the workers across this nation and in our listening audience that have helped to make America strong. Today, we'll tell you about a big win for labor unions representing teachers. Then we'll have news about a new law to help struggling families afford diapers. We'll tell you about a poll that suggests that the congressional race between San Diego Congressman Daryl Issa and challenger Doug Applegate may be too close to call. From Public News Service, we'll have the latest revelations on the FBI investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails, plus news about charter schools and a medical tax impacting seniors. Next, hear what fact-checkers have to say about Donald Trump's fiery immigration speech, in which Trump confirmed he wants to deport all 11 million undocumented immigrants in the United States. No exceptions. We'll have information for you on just how much all those immigrants contribute to the U.S. economy by paying taxes on their labors and even paying into Social Security, money that would all be lost if we spent trillions of dollars to deport them. Then learn why a Lemon Grove developer has been hit with a massive fine aimed at stopping pollution. Next, hear about a witness who has come forward with new clues in the case of missing teenager Mickey Guidry, who vanished in the Anza Borrego Desert nearly 7 years ago, as we first reported. On Crime Beat, hear about a frightening attack in La Mesa by assailants wielding machetes and hammers. We'll also have news about new federal emission standards for trucks, a gift basket drive to brighten holidays in La Mesa for seniors, and a warning for dog owners about dangers posed by hops used in craft beer brewing. Then we'll take you to the Borona Powwow, honoring Native American traditions in Lakeside, and then we'll share the latest public health warnings on the Zika virus. On Green Scene, hear about a landmark agreement by the federal government to help restore the Salton Sea. And then we'll have an oldie but goodie as we replay our reel-to-reel interview with the Corey Wilkins Band. Finally, we'll end our show this Labor Day with the late, great Pete Seeger singing the classic labor song, John Henry. So stay tuned for all of these stories and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. Welcome to East County Magazine Show's Jobs Talk, bringing you news about great jobs, job training opportunities, and growing our regional economy. Today we celebrate Labor Day, honoring the achievements of working people across America. This week, some of those working people, teachers, scored a landmark victory when the California Supreme Court let stand an appellate court decision protecting teachers' tenure. The case, Vergara versus California, has been closely watched nationwide as a test of whether courts would invalidate rules that protect teachers from arbitrary or politically motivated firing. The lawsuit challenged laws that plaintiffs claimed violated the constitutional rights of students. Those laws grant protections of tenure to teachers after 2 years on the job, making firing based primarily on seniority. Randy Weingarten, president of the American Federation of Teachers, said the Vergara case distracted from real problems in public schools. The real fixes, she believes, are smaller classes, new teachers, and more secure funding to assure students' success. But plaintiffs say they will continue their battle, this time in the legislature. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
Two bills now on the governor's desk aim to help California parents afford diapers for young children. One measure would provide a $50 a month diaper voucher to families on welfare with children under age two. The benefit would be through the state's CalWORKS program starting in 2020, if signed by Governor Jerry Brown. A second bill before the governor would exempt diapers from California sales tax helping all families with children in diapers statewide. That measure would also exempt feminine hygiene products such as tampons from sales tax in an effort to help women afford these necessities. Food items are already exempted from the sales tax in California. Reporting for the East County Magazine on KNSJ Radio, this is Rebecca Williamson.
A new poll released Monday by the Doug Applegate campaign shows him to be in a statistical dead heat with 8-term Republican Representative Daryl Issa in the 49th Congressional District. The poll showed Issa ahead by 45% to 42%, a 3-point gap that is nevertheless within the margin of error. The poll of 599 likely voters was conducted in the second week of August, Times of San Diego reports. Applegate, a Democrat, did better in the June primary than any previous challenger, losing 45% to 51% in the primary for the district that includes North San Diego and South Orange counties. His campaign manager, Robert Dempsey, cited Issa's endorsement of Donald Trump as a reason for Applegate's unexpected gains with voters. He states the poll shows Donald Trump continues to drag down Issa, a vocal supporter of the toxic Republican presidential candidate. The Issa campaign dismissed the new poll, saying that it shows Issa is well-positioned to win re-election this November. Calvin Moore, Issa's communications director, stated, "Even in a poll conducted at the height of the Democrats' post-convention bump, Congressman Issa has consistently stayed on top. Applegate is a retired Marine colonel and trial attorney. Issa, a businessman who started a successful car alarm company before being elected to Congress. Issa was named the most corrupt member of Congress in 2012 by Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, or CREW, a nonpartisan watchdog group." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jim Brewster.
Just hours after returning from meeting Mexico's president last week, Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump delivered a fiery speech in Arizona in which he stereotyped Mexicans as rapists and murderers. He called for a revival of an Operation Wetback mass deportation program similar to a widely criticized program under President Eisenhower's administration, only tougher. He also announced plans to cancel President Obama's actions that would protect people brought here as children, as well as the parents of U.S. citizens. Trump made clear that his goal is to ultimately deport every undocumented immigrant in the U.S. Trump stated, "Anyone who has entered the United States illegally is subject to deportation. Our message to the world will be this: you cannot obtain legal status or become a citizen of the United States by illegally entering our country. Can't do it." So what about undocumented immigrants who are already living in the U.S.? Trump stated, "They have to go back." Words that are striking fear in immigrant communities where some have lived in the shadows for decades. Now, even some supporters of tougher immigration stances have called Trump's call to deport 11 million undocumented immigrants in the U.S. cost prohibitive and unrealistic. Trump has yet to offer any explanation for how he would fund such a massive operation. He also called for tripling the number of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, agents, holding worksite raids, and starting a special deportation task force that would focus first on criminals, but ultimately, no undocumented person would be safe, not people who have been working and paying taxes here for many years, not elderly parents of American citizens, not even young people brought here as babies who have never known any other home but the United States in some cases. Trump called for these massive expenditures to deport everyone while ignoring the fact that illegal immigration is actually at the lowest point since 1972, almost half a century ago, back when Richard Nixon was president, the Washington Post reports. In addition, Trump renewed his call to build a bigger, impenetrable border wall. Trump again said in his Arizona speech that Mexico would pay for this wall to keep American guns from crossing the border to the south. He claimed he didn't get around to discussing that payment for the wall during his meeting with Mexico's president, but Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto promptly tweeted that he told Trump during their meeting that Mexico will not pay for the wall. After that, a senior Trump policy advisor reportedly said Trump is considering using cash seized from drug cartels to fund construction of the border wall if elected. But there's a big problem with that idea. Seized drug assets are currently used in part to fund federal criminal investigations and in part to fund local law enforcement agencies. That includes San Diego's Sheriff's Department and Police Department. So Trump's wall, if funded with drug seizure money, would actually be taking money away from local and federal law enforcement agencies. It is unclear whether Trump's impenetrable wall would or would not replace the border fence in East County with a solid barrier, or whether any consideration of openings in that wall for wildlife such as bighorn sheep to cross the border for access to water or food would be eliminated. Trump fanned the flames of bigotry in his speech, claiming countless Americans who have died in recent years would be alive today if not for the open border policies of this administration. He then invited relatives of people killed by immigrants to speak. But his remarks ignore the fact that studies have consistently found Latino immigrants in border towns and even big cities like New York are more law-abiding, with lower crime rates than white or black Americans. Now, fact-checkers for nonpartisan organizations found that Trump also misrepresented President Obama's policies. In fact, border crossings have actually fallen sharply, and spending on border security has gone up during Obama's tenure, while deportations are currently at an all-time high, with Obama's administration, however, primarily targeting criminals, not the vast majority of law-abiding immigrants whose only crime was entering the country without documentation to seek a better life for themselves or their families. Trump also cited figures from a biased source, the anti-immigrant group FAIR, claiming illegal immigrants cost America $113 billion a year. Now that is completely false. The figure includes the cost of educating and providing medical care to U.S. citizens whose parents happen to be immigrants. Trump further claimed, "These illegal workers draw much more out of the system than they will ever pay in." That ignores the fact that immigrants in the United States pay almost $12 billion in state and local taxes. So if you deport them all, that money will be gone. Plus, up to 75% of undocumented immigrants pay into Social Security, even though they can't collect it unless they become citizens. Legalizing those people in the shadows would actually increase tax revenues and Social Security payments for the United States. Trump also misrepresented positions of his opponent, Hillary Clinton, falsely stating that she has said she would give Social Security to undocumented immigrants. Clinton has made no such claim, although immigrants who someday become citizens could be eligible for Social Security. But Trump, and most in the Republican Party, have opposed any pathway to citizenship for the immigrants who are already here. Trump's inflammatory speech drew praise from some conservatives and from David Duke, the former leader of the Ku Klux Klan, a racial hate group. But his speech alienated many former supporters in the Latino community. Jacob Monti resigned from Trump's National Hispanic Advisory Council after the Arizona speech. Monti stated, "What I heard today was not realistic and not compassionate." Another member who dropped his support, Texas pastor Ramiro Pena, called Trump's National Hispanic Advisory Council a scam. Trump's trip to Mexico last week, by the way, was made against the advice of U.S. diplomats and security advisors, as well as the U.S. Embassy in Mexico. Press was excluded from that private meeting that Trump has characterized as positive. But Mexico's president told Televisa that some of Trump's positions are a threat to Mexico, adding that the Mexican people are very insulted by Trump's remarks. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice. This is Miriam Raftery. The 46th annual Verona Powwow was held over the weekend at the Verona Reservation in Lakeside. Powwows aim to preserve Native American cultural traditions for future generations. Verona's powwow attracts tribal dancers and drummers from across the nation, all in full regalia, and each dance has special significance. Visitors can also find Native American arts and crafts, such as jewelry, pottery, or hand-carved flutes. A highlight of the powwow is a grand procession led by honored tribal elders. At Verona, the grand procession included a victory song, honoring all warriors, including our military and veterans.
To celebrate with them their victory as they return home to their families. Very honored to have these distinguished men carrying our field staff and our flag, representing the spirit of our warriors, the military and civic duty. Charlie Tailfeather carrying our Eagle Staff from the Blackfeet, Chippewa Cree people, carrying our Eagle Staff for us this evening. Thank you, Charlie. Aho, hi, hi.
Now, if you missed the Barona Powwow, there's still time to visit the Sequan Powwow here in East County, which is coming up next weekend. You can find details at eastcountymagazine.org in our events section and on our calendar. This is Miriam Raftery, reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Jim Brewster with the Green Scene Report. The San Diego Regional Water Quality Control Board has imposed a $595,367 fine against developer San Altos Lemon Grove LLC for water quality violations related to construction activities at its 18-acre Valencia Hills residential development in Lemon Grove. The Water Board found that the developer committed 81 violations of state law between December 2014 and September 2015. According to the Water Board, the violations focused on the site's persistent lack of effective erosion and sediment controls and subpar housekeeping practices that resulted in 6 sediment discharges from the Valencia Hills construction site into the Encanto Channel. San Diego Water Board Executive Officer David Gibson said the hefty penalty reflects the board's concern for what he calls the appalling lack of compliance and cooperation with city and water board staff by San Altos Lemon Grove LLC, despite many months of inspections and warnings. Sediment from erosion and graded land that's exposed and inadequately protected is the pollutant of greatest concern at construction sites because the sediment can damage aquatic life and ecosystems. Sediment often also transports other harmful pollutants such as metals, fertilizers, pesticides, oil, grease, and bacteria into creeks, bays, and ocean. Violations at the Valencia Hills site were brought to the San Diego Water Board's attention by the City of Lemon Grove after its multiple warnings and enforcement efforts directed at the developer were met with minimal response. Gibson said the Water Board is deeply appreciative of the city's efforts to protect water quality in public streets from illegal construction stormwater discharges. The nearly $600,000 penalty will be deposited into the State Water Pollution Cleanup and Abatement Account. This fund was created by the legislature to provide money for public agencies to remediate pollution when responsible parties are not available. Eligible entities that can apply for this funding include public agencies, as well as certain nonprofit organizations and tribal governments that serve a disadvantaged community and have the authority to clean up water waste.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is Miriam Raftery with an update on a teenager who has been missing for 6 years. Back in 2009, East County Magazine was the first media outlet to report on the teenager who went missing in the Anza Borrego Desert. He's never been seen since then. But now, 6 years later, a reader of ours has come forward to say that he saw Mickey James Guidry, then 16 years old, at the site where the Jeep he drove broke down in the desert over Thanksgiving weekend back in November 2009, just before Mickey went missing. The witness says he saw Mickey Guidry speaking with a couple who offered him a ride, and he says he showed Mickey a map with possible routes that he may have later taken on foot. The Jeep that Mickey was driving was found 22 miles along Fish Creek Wash in the Anza Borrego Desert, its tire worn down to the rim and its bumper torn off. Mickey's wallet and ID were found in the Jeep. His cell phone was not working. To this day, nobody knows if he managed to walk out or get a ride out and go away voluntarily, or if he perished in the desert or met with foul play. East County Magazine first reported on the case nearly 3 weeks after Mickey was last seen, when the sheriff first informed the media that he was missing. Our follow-up coverage raised questions on the early handling of the case by the department's initial investigator, who assumed that Mickey had run away as he had done once before, until the Jeep he'd been driving was found disabled far out in the desert sands. Intensive searches were launched. A dedicated search effort was led by Sergeant Don Parker, who headed up the Sheriff's Search and Rescue Department, and incidentally, he later married Mickey's mother. On the first anniversary of Mickey's disappearance, we spoke with Sergeant Parker, who told us he continues working to find Mickey and several other missing kids. They vanish, but they're not forgotten, he said, and he urged anyone with information to please come forward. And now, it appears, someone has. Bill Knepper posted a comment on a story about Mickey's disappearance on our website at East County Magazine. He wrote, "I happened onto this kid when on a solo Jeep trip. He was by himself and talking to a couple in a black TJ Jeep.
The woman passenger was trying to talk him into a ride out, but he did not want to go the way he came in. He refused to go with me also, as I was headed toward Fish Creek, as they were, Knepper added. Now, I contacted Mr. Knepper by phone and email. He told me that he had only recently heard that Mickey was missing and posted on our site after seeing photos of the Jeep Cherokee and Mickey. He said he did not report his sightings to officials, but came forward now to correct what he thinks may be errors in some assumptions made about the teen's disappearance. We have shared his comments with Sergeant Parker, and we're sharing them now with our listeners in hopes that someone else may come forward with news about what's happened to Mickey Guidry. Knepper says he saw Mickey a quarter to a half mile from where his Jeep was disabled in the opposite direction of where he'd been headed before noon. Knepper says Mickey was not carrying anything and was not far from the broken-down Jeep near a landmark known as Heart Attack Hill. When he saw the teen talking with the couple in the black Jeep, Mickey told Knepper he was alone and that his parents gave him the Jeep. Now, in fact, Mickey had taken that Jeep without his parents' permission after they refused to let him go camping. He was not reported missing at first because his mother assumed he would come home on his own and his father had deployed for Afghanistan around the time that Mickey left. Mickey went to visit a girl he knew from school who was camping with her family in the desert on Split Mountain Road at Ocotillo Wells. The girl's family has said they told Mickey to go home and gave him gas money, but he never made it. Knepper says the woman he saw in the black Jeep was trying to talk Mickey into going with them down through Fish Creek, and Mickey was reluctant to go that route. Knepper adds that when I left, he was still with them. He says the woman in the Jeep was white, heavy-set, and had long blonde hair, in her late 30s or early 40s. Her companion sat in the driver's seat, looking down as if reading. He was white with long black hair about 6 inches long. Knepper observed, I thought this to be a bit unusual, as most people you meet in the outback are pretty friendly. He added that their Jeep was modestly equipped with no big tires and a soft top. Knepper says he frequently visits the desert and has traveled nearly every dirt road between his home in Spring Valley and Kingman, Arizona, where he often goes on business trips. He says he showed Mickey a map, including his location in relation to the possible exit points. He recalls that Mickey's family had told media that Mickey was very familiar with the desert, so to him it seemed odd that he would accidentally wind up with a thrashed Jeep in such a remote area. Knepper, who actually restores Jeeps for a living, had the impression that the Jeep Mickey was driving had been purposefully stuck. Did Mickey leave with the couple in the black Jeep, or perhaps with someone else? Knepper thinks Mickey may have set off on foot, he speculates. Because of previous maps of search areas that I saw on the net, I assumed he exited north across an untraveled portion of the desert. Mickey's mother has long contended that she believes her son is alive somewhere and hopes he will someday be found safe or contact her. The fact that intensive searches did not find any human remains adds to the hope that Mickey made it out of the desert alive. Mickey attended high school in San Marcos, where he was in the ROTC. He is white with blue eyes. His hair was sandy-colored when he vanished. He had acne on his face, and he wore metal braces. He was 5 feet 10 inches tall, and he weighed 155 pounds. He may have been wearing denim jeans, blue high-top canvas shoes, and possibly a dark blue hoodie. He had spoken of traveling to Los Angeles to visit a brother, although he doesn't have a brother there. He also has ties to Arkansas. His mother and a friend have said he did not do any drugs and had not been in any recent trouble other than taking his parents' Jeep and before that their motorcycle without permission. He sometimes used the nicknames Mike and Mikey. In 2014, an age-progressed photo showing what Mickey might look like today was released. Now you can view that on our website at eastcountymagazine.org by typing Mickey Guidry into the search bar, and that last name is spelled G-U-I-D-R-Y. But his fate remains unknown now, nearly 7 years after he vanished. Mickey's family has also offered a $3,500 reward for any information that leads to finding Mickey. If you have information on the whereabouts of Mickey James Guidry, please call the San Diego County Sheriff's Homicide Detail at 858-974-2321. You can also call the Crime Stoppers Anonymous tip line at 888-580-8477. Anonymous email and text messages can also be sent in via the website sdcrimestoppers.org.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Rebecca Williamson with a Crime Beat report. Two women in South La Mesa woke at 3 a.m. on Tuesday, August 26, to the sounds of banging on their front door. The women looked outside and saw six people bashing the house and shattering car windows with hammers and a machete. Believing they were targets of mistaken identity, one of the women confronted an assailant who then threatened her life. Her roommate, Sarah Wright, told 10 News. The vandalism continued for about 10 minutes. Wright said the attackers, who all appeared to be in their 20s, included men and at least one woman. The attackers left in a red minivan before police arrived. If you have any information on this crime, please call the La Mesa Police Department.
California drivers have to share the road with thousands of heavy-duty trucks that transport thousands of pounds of goods across the state every day. But because we also share the air, the Obama administration announced this week that new carbon emission standards will require up to a 25% reduction for trucks and buses over the next 10 years. Paul Billings with the American Lung Association says it will improve the health of people and the economy.
These rules will provide tremendous climate and health benefits to the American people. And the great thing about them is they actually save people money, too, because the vehicles will be more efficient to operate because they'll burn less fuel and operate more efficiently.
There are more than 2,500 miles of interstate in California, making it one of the most heavily traveled regions for big rig traffic. California already has some of the toughest heavy truck emission standards in the country. With semi-trucks often lasting at least 10 years on the road and driving a million miles during that time, Billings predicts the new emission standards will have a long-term impact on the country's air quality.
The thing about trucks is they last a long time, and so it takes a long time for new technology to come in and replace the older trucks as they retire. But this is a forward-looking rule, so we'll continue to see benefits as these cleaner, more efficient vehicles replace the older, less efficient vehicles.
The Obama administration estimates the new rules will cut more than 1 billion metric tons of carbon emissions by 2027 and save the trucking industry $170 billion in fuel costs, reducing petroleum use by 2 billion barrels over the lifetime of the vehicles sold under the new rules. For Public News Service, I'm Mark Richardson.
This is Miriam Raftery with a report on how you can help seniors have a brighter holiday season in La Mesa. Each year, the La Mesa Chamber of Commerce collects donated items and delivers gift baskets for seniors over the holidays. These gift baskets are delivered along with a hot turkey dinner and all the trimmings to selected seniors by the La Mesa Retired Senior Volunteer Patrol. Chamber President Mary England says, this year the number of seniors that need assistance has been increased to 24. She asks community members to donate items by Monday, November 28th. Donors are asked to bring 24 of each item so that there will be enough for all of the seniors' gift baskets. Items needed include canned soups, canned vegetables, canned fruits, crackers, packets of pasta or macaroni and cheese, soap, toothpaste, tissues, hand sanitizers, pens and pads of paper, and gift cards from stores such as Target, Walmart, or any grocery store. England adds, if you have another item you believe will put a smile on their faces, by all means, drop them off. We want to make this again a memorable holiday for our homebound seniors. Donated items should be delivered to the La Mesa Chamber office at 8080 La Mesa Boulevard, Suite 212 in La Mesa.
This is Jonathan Getz with an important alert for dog owners and beer brewers. Home brewing of beer is increasingly popular, but unfortunately, hops used to make beer can be deadly to dogs. Death can occur within 6 hours after consumption if medical treatment is not obtained. Veterinarians, poison control centers, and craft brew beer publications are reporting an increase in the number of dogs poisoned by raw hops, dried hops plugs, or hops pellets. Dogs that ingest hops may show signs of toxicity, including vomiting, agitation, panting, and rapid heartbeat. Hops raises the body temperature in dogs to over 106 degrees, which can cause permanent brain injury or even death. Treatment includes administering antidote medication, inducing vomiting, rinsing the stomach out under anesthesia, and immediately cooling down the dog. If you brew your own beer, always keep hops supplies and hops plants out of the reach of dogs. If you believe your dog has ingested hops, seek veterinary care promptly. You can douse your pet with cold water, use ice packs and air conditioning in your vehicle to help cool down your dog and maybe even save your dog's life.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
The 46th annual Verona Powwow was held over the weekend at the Verona Reservation in Lakeside. Powwows aim to preserve Native American cultural traditions for future generations. Verona's powwow attracts tribal dancers and drummers from across the nation, all in full regalia, and each dance has special significance. Visitors can also find Native American arts and crafts, such as jewelry, pottery, or hand-carved flutes, as well as enjoying Indian fry bread. A highlight of the powwow is a grand procession led by honored tribal elders. At Verona, the grand procession included a victory song honoring all warriors, including our military and veterans.
To celebrate with them their victory as they return home to their families. Very honored to have these distinguished men carrying our field staff and our flag, representing the spirit of our warriors, the military and civic duty. Charlie Tailfeathers carrying our Eagle Staff from the Blackfeet, Chippewa Cree people, carrying our Eagle Staff for us this evening. Thank you, Charlie. Aho, hi, hi.
Now, if you missed the Verona Powwow, there's still time to visit the Sequan Powwow here in East County, which is coming up next weekend. You can find details at eastcountymagazine.org in our events section and on our calendar. This is Miriam Raftery, reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ.
California health officials are warning travelers coming home from Zika-infected places to use insect repellent and practice safe sex for several weeks after coming home, even if you've had no symptoms of the virus. Here's why. The mosquitoes that can transmit Zika are found in San Diego and other parts of our state. So far, local mosquitoes haven't been found to carry the Zika virus. But if a local mosquito bites a recent traveler with Zika virus and then bites other people, the virus can spread, causing an outbreak here. Zika virus can also be transmitted via safe sex for up to 6 months after exposure. Most people with Zika have no symptoms and aren't aware that they are infected. But Zika can cause serious birth defects if pregnant women are infected, including microcephaly, which can cause severe brain damage in infants. Zika babies can also suffer seizures and be born blind or deaf. Zika also causes Guillain-Barré syndrome, a rare neurological condition in adults. Though Zika often causes no symptoms, the most common symptoms are a rash, fever, and joint pain. So far, 170 Zika cases are confirmed in California, but all are believed related to travelers. In the United States, a very widespread outbreak of Zika is occurring in Puerto Rico, and about a dozen cases in Miami were transmitted by mosquito bites in Florida. Officials are most concerned about travelers returning from the Olympics in Brazil, as well as from other countries in South and Central America, the Caribbean, and southern Mexico, where Zika has been rampant. Travelers to areas with Zika are urged to refrain from pregnancy for 6 months and to continue using insect repellent at home. If traveling to an area with Zika, wear long pants and long sleeves and sleep under mosquito netting if there are no screens on windows and doors. Locally, San Diego County health officials urge residents to get rid of standing water since Aedes mosquitoes can breed in just a thimbleful of water and to keep screens in good repair. For more information, visit the California Department of Public Health's website at cdph.ca.gov and click on the Zika virus health advisory page. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, This is Jonathan Getz.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. On Wednesday, the state of California and the federal government signed a historic memorandum of understanding to protect the Salton Sea, located in the desert in Imperial County east of San Diego. The agreement affirms many goals already established by the state and creates new opportunities for geothermal energy development in the area. It also creates a policy framework for the two parties to work together. Responding to that landmark news, a coalition of conservation groups, including Defenders of Wildlife, the Audubon California, and the Pacific Institute, as well as the Sierra Club, called on the state of California to use this new agreement with the federal government on the Salton Sea as a launching point for a renewed effort to get much-needed conservation projects started on the ground. Due to existing agreements, the Salton Sea in 2018 will begin receiving substantially less water than it has in the past, eventually as much as 40% less. The shrinking sea could expose over 60,000 acres of the lake bed, generating massive dust storms that could impair the health of 650,000 Californians. The Salton Sea ecosystem currently hosts more than 400 species of birds, often numbering in the hundreds of thousands, and that entire ecosystem could collapse. Kim Delfino, California Program Director for Defenders of Wildlife, states, "We're glad to see the federal government and state officials recognize what an important priority this is for California and the nation. Their collaboration could avoid an environmental disaster at the Salton Sea." But Michael Cohen, the senior associate with Pacific Institute, observes, "While we now have a memorandum of understanding, there is still no understanding as to how California will achieve its goal of 25,000 acres of habitat and dust control projects at the Salton Sea in time to avert a regional public health and ecological catastrophe." Marina Berrigan, organizer with the Sierra Club's San Gorgonio chapter, warns, "If the Salton Sea disappears, it will have devastating impacts on the surrounding frontline communities, largely made up of low-income people of color, who already suffer from some of the worst air in the nation. This injustice must stop, and resources to protect our environment must move forward. Now it's time to channel this state and federal collaboration to actual Salton Sea projects that benefit people and the ecosystem," she adds. Sarah Friedman is the senior campaign representative with Sierra Club's Beyond Coal campaign. She calls the White House announcement this week a step in the right direction for exploring geothermal around the Salton Sea. She adds, "We know geothermal projects located on the exposed lake bed will reduce dust pollution and move us forward on our climate goals while creating family-sustaining jobs and providing local revenues." Audubon, California Executive Director Bridget McCormick also hailed the announcement, stating, "This is the best opportunity we have had in years to make a real difference for the more than 650,000 people who live around the Salton Sea, as well as the birds and other wildlife that depend on this place for their survival." Now here's some more background on the long effort to save the Salton Sea. When the state of California signed a settlement agreement in 2003 over water issues, the state committed to funding restoration at the Salton Sea to address the widespread habitat loss and dust created by implementation of the agreement. And much of that dust contains toxins from agricultural runoff into the sea over the years. There have been legislative proposals in the past, public hearings, and planning sessions, but little progress has been made on the ground. A task force created last year by California Governor Jerry Brown set a goal for creating 25,000 acres of restored habitat and air quality protection projects, and that commitment was reaffirmed in this week's Memorandum of Understanding. Health officials and environmentalists emphasize that meeting this goal is essential to assure that the Salton Sea does not become a public health threat to an area already suffering from the worst childhood asthma rates in the state. Pollutants released by drying up of the Salton Sea would also impact air quality as far away as here in San Diego County. Saving the Salton Sea is also critical to assure that the sea will continue to provide habitat for millions of birds that travel along the Pacific Flyway. Almost 400 different bird species rely on the deep water, shoreline, mudflats, and wetlands at the Salton Sea, as well as the river channels and agricultural drains leading into it.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Welcome to Reel to Reel. Every show, we will bring you authentic, independent artists,
I'm your host, Dean Bruce, and I sit down every show with a diverse group of musicians, not only digging deep into the grit of the music-making process, but also bringing to you the real stories of these real artists. This is Reel to Reel. Good evening, everyone. Another Reel to Reel is about to come at you. I've got Corey Wilkins' band with me. Guys, say hello.
Hello! Hey.
So we are live, actually, at B&S Brewery tonight. So let's just start out with an easy one. And how did you guys get started?
Well, Laura and I are brother and sister. Started writing some of my own stuff. And I realized, like, the first thing a band needs outside of, like, a front man is a drummer. You know, keep the rhythm section together. So my sister, Laura, was in college at the time. And she came home from Christmas break, and I was like, hey, you need to come play my drums, because I need to start to show you how to play, because you're going to play drums for me. So anyway, eventually she started playing and really, really got into it. Then we moved to Florida, lived there for a couple years, played a bunch of gigs. That's where we kind of really came of age musically, I guess. We just played so much.
You know, you guys obviously are a country rock band. What kind of musical influences did you have when you guys got started?
Well, for Laura and I, when we grew up, we had a lot of music in the house. Around 1988, my parents started going to, like, this real fundamentalist church where, like, any music you listened to that wasn't Amazing Grace was Satan music. And so they got rid of all the records, but they kept this one, like, Springsteen record, and they hid it in their closet, and Laura and I found it one time, and we snuck it to her bedroom and dubbed it on cassette, and ended up listening to that. That was, like, the only music we had to listen to outside of what they were playing in church for, like, 5 or 6 years.
Town every What you guys
hey
do
guys, so much. We're
going to
take a real short break.
Everybody's got their pocket, get a refreshment, their silo beverage. That they're in.
We'll be
and
back
you guys
in
play really
minutes.
Well together. I think that you guys really do a good job of bringing that onto the stage. Now, is the dynamic when you're putting the music together, is it similar to that? Or do you just throw something out on the table and go, okay, guys, we're playing this and let's go with it?
I am an absolute... What's a good word?
Slave driver.
Nazi.
Yes. Yes. You notice the unanimity here.
If you don't show up and don't know your part, you're dog meat.
Oh, no.
No. You know, I can come in with a song and I can come in with a vision, and these guys say, okay, we see exactly where you're at. We see exactly what you want. We'll do it. And we'll do a really good job of it.
That's because we've been trained to do that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny because we talked to a lot of bands. The first band that I ever played in, spent a lot of time in this band, and it was the first time I'd actually ever played drums in a band. And my bassist was sight impaired.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the most amazing bassist that I had ever played with. But he was also the most difficult to play with because I couldn't look at him and get a response out of him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you guys are in a little bit of a similar boat because they have to take your cues from you in different ways.
And Laura
yeah. as
and
well.
Laura,
yeah. Yeah. And you know, so you've got your lead singer and you've got your backing, your back drummer, your anchor to the band that you know, can't see. So how have you guys been able to overcome that?
We all know Laura is the real leader of the band. I pretend like I am because I sing. Laura's the boss. Laura is the real leader of the band.
Yeah.
But I can really intuit where she's going to go. And since we all understand she's the leader of the band, she can give everyone else visual cues. So she can give Steve and Eddie and Greg visual cues, and I can intuit what's going to happen.
It's been hard for me to think of in that way because I don't know what it's like to give visual cues. So Corey will say to me, give the band a visual cue when we go into this broke down section. And I really have to think about it because I'll forget if I don't really remind myself because it's not natural.
Two, one, two, three, four.
Thank you.
it's a damn good thing for a boy like me. It's a damn good thing for a boy like me that some girls like guitars.
So where can we find out information about you guys?
You can go to CoreyWilkinsBand.com. You can also please like our Facebook page at Facebook.com/CoreyWilkinsMusic, or you can find us on Twitter at CoreyWilkinsBand.com.
And if you want to check out samples of your music, you guys have a Reverb Nation page.
We do.
I think it's ReverbNation/CoreyWilkins.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
You know way more than I do.
Maybe Late Night Ed knew that. I don't know.
Corey Wilkins Band, all of you have been great to have on the show. I appreciate all your time and all your energy. I especially appreciate you packing it up and coming out here to BNS and doing a show for us. Awesome. So,
thank you so much, you. Dean. I hope so.
Thanks for having us.
Again, folks, this is Corey Wilkins Band. This is Dean Bruce, Reel to Reel on KNSJ 89.1 East County Magazine Live. Everybody have a great night. Reel to Reel is recorded on location at San Diego Performance Academy, with help of studio producer Dave Bramley, executive producer Jerry Dean, engineer Levi Moore. If you would like to appear on the show, check us out at www.reeltorealsessions.com, facebook.com/reeltorealsessions, or you can email us at info@reeltorealsessions.com. Title music provided by Look Up Here.
We hope you've enjoyed our show today, and in honor of Labor Day, we're going to be finishing up with a famous labor song, an oldie but goodie, John Henry by the late, great Pete Seeger.
John Henry was a little baby, sitting on his papa's knee, and he picked up a hammer and a little piece of steel, cried, "A hammer's gonna be the death of me, Lord, Lord, hammer's gonna be the death of me." Cried, "A hammer's gonna be the death of me, hammer's gonna be the death of me." Now the captain, he said to John Henry, "I'm gonna bring that steam drill around. I'm gonna bring that steam drill out on the job. I'm gonna whop that steel on down, down, down. Whop that steel on down. I'm gonna whop that steel on. Gonna whop that steel on." John Henry told his captain, "Lord, a man ain't nothing but a man. But before I'd let your steam drill beat me down, I would die with a hammer in my hand. I would die with a hammer in my hand. I would die with a hammer in my. I would die with a hammer in my hand." John Henry said to his shaker, "Shaker, why don't you sing? 'Cause I'm swinging 30 pounds from my hips on down. Just listen to that cold steel ring. Just listen to that cold steel.
Just listen to that cold steel. Just listen to that cold steel ring. Now the captain, he said to John Henry, I believe that mountain's caving in. John Henry said right back to the captain, ain't nothing but my hammer-sucking wind. 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 Invented the steam drill, he thought he was mighty fine. But John Henry drove 15 feet and the steam drill only made 9. Lord, Lord, steam drill only made 9. I said the steam drill only made, said the steam drill only made. John Henry hammered in the mountains, his hammer was striking fire. But he worked so hard, he broke his poor heart, and he lay down his hammer and he died. He lay down his hammer and he died. He lay down his hammer and he died, Lord, Lord. He lay down his hammer and he died. Now John Henry had a little woman, her name was Polly Ann. John Henry took sick and had to go to bed, and Polly Ann drove steel like a man, Lord, Lord. Polly Ann drove steel like a man. I said, Polly Ann drove steel like a... Polly Ann drove steel like a man. So every Monday morning, when the bluebird began to sing, you can hear John Henry a mile or more. You can hear John Henry's hammer ring. You can hear John Henry's hammer. You can hear John Henry's hammer. You can hear John Henry's hammer ring. You can hear John Henry's hammer. You can hear John Henry's hammer. You can hear John Henry's hammer. You can hear John Henry's hammer ring.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Royalty Free Music, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.